Blog Talk Radio. Puck Chatter Radio, the official online audio program of thethirdmanin.com, puckchatter.com, broadcasting live as always here on blogtalkradio.com. I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of thethirdmanin.com, puckchatter.com, here on this Tuesday night, June the 18th, 2013, 8:01, here in Chicago. Superstar, you on the line?
I am, buddy. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Blackhawks are down in this Stanley Cup Final Series. 2-1 to the Boston Bruins. Tonight on the show, I am going to try to make sense of what Joel Quenneville is doing behind the Blackhawks bench. And when I'm done with, when I'm done doing that, Superstar, I'm going to be exhausted, and you're going to need to talk for a while.
I've
got this feeling. Don't mind me while I log into my email. Yes, the show prep tonight was
kept at
a minimum. Yeah, kept at a minimum. oh gosh, there's a lot to go over. Obviously, we're going to focus on the three games that that have taken place. More. I want to focus more on the last two. Just because we don't really have a lot of time here tonight, but we're going to go over all that, some odds and ends. I got a bunch of emails here that are actually from the past couple of weeks, so we may go over that. We got to talk about, what could we talk about? Victor Stahlberg got back in the lineup.
Yeah, he did.
Marian Hossa. We got to talk about what the heck happened in Boston during the warm-up on Monday night. And why did Ben Smith not know he was playing until after the warm-up? Why did he not skate the warm-up?
Oh, very, very good questions.
We have a lot of things to figure out here tonight. Gotta love Joel. Gotta love Joel. You know, if you're covering the Blackhawks, you never, ever at a loss for what to talk about or what to write about. I know that you have some very strong opinions about what's going on here and what's going to happen. I know that you're forecasting doom for the Blackhawks.
Oh yeah, it's very, very doomy and gloomy over here. I'm frustrated, Block. I'm frustrated.
Well, maybe I can help you out. This is what I do. I help people out.
Please.
What can I do for you, Superstar?
What are they doing? Where is the team I watched for, 48 games of the regular season? Because this is not that team. Not even close to that team. Very, very. Don't even get me started on the power play.
Well, the power play is fun. It's fun bad.
You know what? You're absolutely right. It is
because
fun
you
bad.
you know at this, you know they are not going to score, and when they finally do score, you're not going to believe it, and you're going to have to rewind the game and watch five or six times to even convince yourself that it actually did happen.
Exactly.
What is it? Is 18 in a row now? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Blackhawks in their what was the stat I was reading today? I think Mike Emmerich even brought it up on the broadcast last night. In their last five power plays, they have one shot on goal.
Yeah, I was going to say,
on a power play, you're skating with at least one extra player than the other team.
Yes. I think if they even got a scoring chance, like a legitimate scoring chance on the power play, I'd have to rewind it and make sure.
Superstar, it doesn't matter. Corsi does not figure scoring chances. All that matters is if you're directing the puck on net. So Corsi says the Blackhawks are doing just fine.
The Corsi is wrong. Sorry, Sam.
I don't know. Corsi is indicative of who's going to win the series. So the Blackhawks are on course. They're on course.
All right. I like it. It doesn't help me. And Block, I know we're gonna kind of get to the meat of this, and I got to get this off my head. What the hell was Duncan Keith doing? It was even on the power play, and it was about 5 minutes after Eddie Olczyk said, this is what they should do. And, of course, what do? That exact thing. And Duncan Keith has an hour from the top of the circle, and, you know, instead of taking a shot, no, he tries to pass it through four guys. I don't even know what I watched. It was one of those games where it ended and you're like, what the hell was that?
Well, it was the Blackhawks willingly being forced into playing willingly, maybe a little bit unfair, but allowing themselves to be forced into playing a strictly perimeter hockey game. And, I mean, they made that win about as simple as you're going to find, as easy as you're going to find, a Game 3 of a Stanley Cup Final 2-0 shutout victory is ever going to be for a team. That's what you saw.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, since what we do is assess blame and who's to blame for it? I mean, you know, the Hawks are down. The Hawks are, you know, one of the things that was a popular stat going into Game 3 on Monday night in Boston was the fact that in these playoffs against the Minnesota Wild, against the Detroit Red Wings, against the Los Angeles Kings, that the Blackhawks had not won a Game 3. Now, that's all fine and well, okay? They hadn't won a Game 3, and they'd come back and won each of those series, obviously. But the level of competition has gone up a notch. You're playing against a team that is at least as good as you. And through three games, it's proven to be a better team than you. Through three games, has been proven to be a better coached team than you, a better prepared team than you. Through three games, has better special teams than you. Through three games, has at least an even matched goaltender as you. And now, you know, now you've lost home ice for the time being to this team. You know, I'm not one that necessarily believes in, you know, as a rule, momentum in any series. I think momentum is a real thing. And anybody that's competed in real competition that they've been passionate about would agree, you know, that momentum is a real thing, but maybe momentum is the wrong term. A more applicable term is probably confidence. In all of the confidence going on in this series is shifted to the Boston side. And that's a real factor. Because how do you get the confidence back? How if you're the Blackhawks, how do you begin to believe in yourself again? Now, just because Boston's up 2-1 in the series doesn't mean they have the momentum. if you want to use the word momentum. You know, and that it's a popular term that's used in hockey and you know, probably in other sports that I pay less attention to, but I'm sure that it's out there and it's used. You know, it's like we talked about this before. You know, in the playoffs, when a team's getting their ass handed to them in a game, and the game's out of reach, it's 5-2, there's a minute and a half left, and all of a sudden you see a bunch of fights going on. You know, the losing team goes out and starts throwing their weight around and tries to stir things up. And you'll hear broadcasters and you'll hear old coaches and all this. And we talked about this 2 months ago, whenever the first round was. Feels like 2 months ago. It's a buzz term that coaches use, but really what they're doing, and I believe I talked about this with Mike Peck when Mike Peck was on. So you weren't on that show, but it's a buzz term that coaches use. It's sort of a con. You're conning your players into buying into something that's not real. But really, what the coach is trying to do is get his players out of that funk of looking up at the scoreboard and seeing that you're down 5-2, and you're trying to get your players invested in the game again and in the series, and get them motivated and believing in something again. And if you have to do it by, you know, as a hockey coach, if you have to do it by sending your guys out there and maybe for, you know, forwardly or not so forwardly saying, guys, go out there, run somebody, stir them up, let them know you're there, quote unquote, send a message. You're not really sending a message, because if you're really strategizing, you would lay down and the coach would walk up and down the bench and say, hey, guys, look down at the ice, look like somebody just killed your dog, make these guys think that we've totally lost hope, so they drop their guard, so to speak, and we can come out flying in the next game and catch them on their heels. Like that would be, but that's not what you do, because you as a hockey coach, you have to get your team back invested. You got to get them to buy into something, to believe in something. So my question at this point is, what is Joel Quenneville talking to his players about right now, and what can he get them to believe in to get this series turned around? And I don't know what that is, and that would be my concern for the Blackhawks. My concern is, if you're Joel Quenneville, where do you begin? Because the power play is obviously being drawn up, and it's being drawn up. Plays are being devised with the idea of waiting for lanes and holes in the defense to open up that just aren't opening up. So what you have is you just have an endless seam of passing that ends up meaning nothing, and then a shot on goal just for the sake of having a shot on goal, because you know the bench is yelling at you, the time is ticking down, so you throw something on net and it gets cleared, and then there goes your power play. It's a power play that, I mean, you basically just strip it down at this point and just say, guys, throw the puck at the net, crash the net, we'll get one eventually. But let's forget about everything that we've talked about. I mean, that's what I would do. If I'm coaching the power, if I'm compound, I just say, it's not working. Let's just forget about what we've been drawing up, what we've been working towards this past 2 months. I'm going to put my best players on the ice. I'm going to put some big bodies towards the net, and let's just throw pucks at the net, and let's just outwork the other team, because that's the best way now that we can score goals. But you got to get one first. What can Joel Quenneville get this team to buy into? Because there's so many guys up and down the lineup that just look either gassed or confused or frustrated. And then you got Joel, and this is what we want to talk about a little bit, with his lineup and with moving guys around and how he's allocating ice time, that is has to be frustrating to certain players on the team. So, I mean, that's the dilemma for, you know, that I see it right now for the Hawks. What do you get? What do they buy into? Where do they start building from? Aside from you just throw the guys out there on the ice on Wednesday night and hope that you score the first goal and you build off of that. So is that what the Hawks are looking at right now? We hope that we score the first goal so we could build off of that. You can't build off of hope in game four of the Stanley Cup Finals. I think the Blackhawks will throw their best effort at Boston, but if things don't go their way early, or if the game's not tight enough to where if they start to you know, get things together and have some great individual efforts that lead to great scoring chances, whether they're goals or not, and then the thing starts to turn around for them. Okay, but they have to be in the game. How do they stay in the game until that happens for them? Because the Blackhawks have been outplayed. You know, I thought the first period on Monday night was pretty evenly played, but for the most part, I think they've been outplayed for the last 5.5 periods. They're down 2-1 in the series. I thought it was an evenly – I don't care what the hockey analytics say. I thought it was an evenly matched game in game one. Either team could have won. The Blackhawks just happened to win. Boston should have won it. Dogovins blew his opportunity. And then the Blackhawks got a nice bounce off of Shaw. They won the game. Fine. That's fair. But ever since, it's been Boston's series. And how do the Blackhawks turn that around? I don't see anything that stands out to me that says they can do it.
Well, let me ask you this, Block. And I don't either, unfortunately. But you heard a lot after the Boston-Pittsburgh series that it was basically Pittsburgh's failure to adapt and kind of change their game plan, so to speak, to give them a better chance. You know, from what you see, have the Hawks changed anything that they're doing, or it's the same question. You know, what can they do to get back into it? But
They haven't changed anything that they're doing, and I don't know that you can at this stage. Like you're either capable of playing a certain way or you're not. And the Blackhawks proved against the Detroit Red Wings that when the chips were down, and I think there are a lot of people right now that are they've got that belief or that hope or the wishful thinking, you want to call it, in their back pocket. It's, oh, well, the Blackhawks were down in that Red Wings series, and they came back, and you can't count this team out. And I don't think you can count them out. And I think that there's a pretty good chance that the best possible effort the Hawks had to give, they'll give it on Wednesday night, and they'll even up the series. I just don't know that they – I mean, I don't believe that they can do that. Three of the next four. It's to me, there's too many things that work, you know, that are working against them. Crawford's been very good. Okay, so you would figure, and all the Crawford detractors, and I mean, quite frankly, we've seen it that even in these same playoffs that he'll give up a bad goal. Is the margin for error wide enough, we should say, that Crawford can give up a bad goal like he did to Joakim Andersen in Detroit on Memorial Day? Can the Blackhawks get away with that in this series? against the Boston Bruins, a team that they can't win a faceoff against. They don't win enough board battles against. And they're being outskated by. The one thing that you would think that the Hawks wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be at a disadvantage in the series, they're being outskated by the Bruins. I mean, I'm not surprised by any of this. It's just, well, we'll get into the Joel stuff in a while. I got to do this, and then we'll continue here. You know, did you enjoy any Molson Canadian over the weekend, Superstar?
Unfortunately, no. I have not. The wife was in charge of the alcohol for the weekend, and sadly, even though I recommended it highly, she did not oblige. So
well,
now,
as the
it's on tap for tomorrow.
As the official imported beer of the NHL, Molson Canadian recognizes that every decision a coach makes in the playoffs means the difference between skating to glory, Claude Julien, and skating into the offseason, Joel Quenneville. We also know that the third man in and puckchatter.com and Puck Chatter Radio audience understands this. Found on all Molson Canadian bottles in the U.S., the Call of the Cup back label series lets fans play the role of coach and make the tough calls from their smartphones. We did this a little bit last week, Superstar. You don't even have to do it on your smartphones. You can just pick up a beer, read it, debate it, and then get all mad about it with your friends, start arguing, start throwing fists, hitting each other over the head with bottles.
And then get a new bottle.
And then get another bottle and do it all over again. I'm not saying that's happened. These scenarios make for great banter and great content out of the 45 unique scenarios you might encounter. Here's one, Superstar. The Call of the Cup. In a Stanley Cup final, would you rather face off in a historic rematch or be part of creating a new rivalry, Superstar? Rematch or new rivalry?
Ooh, that's a really good one. I think you got to go... I think you got to go rematch. I think you got to go rematch.
You would have rather faced the Philadelphia Flyers than the Boston Bruins.
Well, yeah, the Flyers are bad. So
as long as they bring back Michael Layton.
Yeah, bring back Michael Layton.
Because the Blackhawks are sure to win. The Blackhawks would be probably doing okay in this series if Boston had an AHL goalie in net.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, I don't think
that it would have mattered in game three, but maybe
no.
You know, game one and two.
Yeah. So I go rematch. How about you? You go new or you go rematch?
I go rematch. But not the Flyers. A player for a heated rival has recently become a free agent. He would help your playoff chances, but would clash with some of your players. What do you do? Sign him or trade for him? They should have, we'll give him a break on that one. Just sign him, but that's not what that question. Let's just keep going. Trade for him or pass on him?
I think we did this one last week. I'd still go trade him. Trade for him. Get him in. If he's going to help you win a cup, you got to bring him in.
I agree. We did these other two. And I don't have any Molson in front of me, so we'll try this one. Which are more valuable during the Stanley Cup playoffs, power play goals or shorthanded goals?
That's a good one. I mean, obviously, they're both very important. I would say, you could tell just from this series, I was going to go power play goals.
Well,
you have the advantage. This series is a perfect example of this question because you have two so evenly matched teams that the power play is really a key indication of, you know, who's going to win. I mean, this series is perfect. Blackhawks, well, what, 0-18, I believe we just said, and they're down in the series. You know, I know Boston was 1-4 last night. I believe they got one in game two as well. And, you know, also slightly better than the Hawks, and they're up 2-1. So I go power play goal.
That, you know, it wouldn't have mattered last night, obviously, in the outcome, but Boston had two tremendous shorthanded opportunities. Remember, was it the second period that Boston had? Well, the Blackhawks had back-to-back power plays, and Boston had all the scoring chances shorthanded.
Yeah, they had like four chances.
Everly.
Yeah, there was four chances with two breakaways.
Not that it would have mattered last night or Monday night, but had one of those two converted, and let's say it was an evenly matched game, I mean, that would have been demoralizing and probably would have swung the game the other way. But I don't know either. It's a toss-up. Obviously, if your power play is a killer, then it's your greatest weapon in the postseason just because there's, you know, in theory, there's not a whole lot of power plays in the playoffs, but especially when you get this far. But anyway, I want to thank Molson Canadian. Again, Molson Canadian, the Call of the Cup series. Get out to that local grocer, Binnie's, wherever you buy liquor. Corner, standing outside 7-Eleven, slipping someone some money. Wherever you got to do it, whether you're just having a couple during the game, you're unwinding after work, whether you're going out on a Friday night like me and just getting naughty, drink Molson Canadian, the official imported beer of the National Hockey League. And also like them on Facebook, facebook.com/MolsonCanadianUSA. Superstar, when they first hopped on with us, they were at 2,800 likes on Facebook. And they've gained 8,000 likes since they joined up with Puck Chatter Radio.
That's results right there.
Now, I'm not suggesting that all of those likes were from us. I can't take credit for them all, but I will.
I should.
Molson Canadian, again, facebook.com/MolsonCanadianUSA. Go do that. And go drink some Molson Canadian because it's good. All right, we got to get into this Marian Hossa thing. So, of course, Marian Hossa, how do you say, upper body, right? Now, supposedly, Marian Hossa got injured at some point in Game 2 at the United Center. Now, everyone that I know, and it's been on Twitter and stuff, I'm just scrolling through Twitter here as we do the show. Everybody's, you know, I guess it's out there that the suggestion, the speculation is that it's his neck. Now, a friend of the program, I saw this earlier today. Now I have to call up his, you know what, if I had a spare moment today, I should have asked him to come on the show and tell us about this. But Adam Summers, who you can follow him on Twitter at adam_summers.com, exactly like you would think, Summers with an S, not a Z. My enunciation is a little off tonight, Superstar. But Adam Summers, he's got a podcast of his own, Breakout Hockey. You can catch that over at breakouthockey.podomatic.com. Of course, we've had Adam on in the past. But Adam said, wrote something on his Twitter today. Uh, I did not see this because I was not in my seats, but according to Adam, who was at the game, in the little skate before the overtime started, Michael Hanzus was like doing a little quick sprint, you know, to kind of get his legs and probably his back loosened up a little bit and get going, you know, as the teams took the ice and then obviously going to start the overtime period. Adam says he witnessed that Hanzus fell down and took out Marian Hossa. And that Hanzus got up and appeared fine, but Hossa didn't look right, that he got up and he was a little bit shaken up and went to the bench. Now, of course, Marian Hossa did play a regular shift during that overtime, but did not play in Game 3 on Monday night. So if he had a stiff neck, you know, obviously a neck is something that's not, I mean, it may have not stiffened up on him at all or felt, you know, out of the ordinary at all until the next morning. Most neck injuries are like that. A lot of them. I shouldn't say most, but so that might be what it was. But the point of the whole thing is, and where the controversy, I probably everyone has covered this. I haven't read anything. I don't know. But the funny thing about this is, and I know what Joel said in his press conference today. You know, the funny thing. Okay, let me first. So Marian Hossa, according to the Blackhawks after the game, and both Jonathan Toews and Joe Quenneville recorded after the game, is saying that they knew all day that Marian was going to be a game time decision. Okay. And Marian skated the warm-up. Also, who skated the warm-up, who's been skating the warm-up as the extra body since the latter part of the Minnesota Wild series, I think exclusively. I don't know that for a fact, but from what I've witnessed and heard, Jamal Mayers has been the extra body in warm-ups pretty much on a game-to-game basis. Jamal Mayers skated the warm-up in Game 3 in Boston. Okay. Of course, after the warm-up, it's decided that Marian can't go. So they call on Ben Smith, who did not take the warm-up. Now, the original – when Ben Smith talked to the reporters after the game, he told them that he wasn't told that he was playing until after the warm-up, and he made it sound like it was a pretty big scramble for him to get to get warmed up and dressed and everything. So he made, in his initial, Ben Smith's initial comments, I mean, he made it sound like he had no idea he was playing or, you know, very little idea. So it's really mysterious because if Joel, you know, and Marian knew all day that it was 50, let's just say it was 50-50, then you would figure that Joel would know who he was going to insert in the lineup if Marian couldn't go. Now, today in his press conference, and this is funny because I was having a conversation with one of the writers today. We were talking, and this was probably around noon. And we were talking, and I suggested that maybe Ben didn't skate the warm-up because Joel didn't want to tip his hand that something was up. And since Jamal Mayer skates the warm-up before every game, having someone else out there in the warm-up would perhaps tip off Claude Julien that something was up. And that's my suggestion was met with laughter, you know, and like, you know, what would be gained by that? And you know, I didn't disagree with it. I wasn't suggesting that it was, you know, that I would do it, but I was just, you know, I'm trying to think like Joel, and not that I know Joel, but I from what you know about him as a coach, you know, I mean, you're just trying to think like these people do. And sure, sure as shit, superstar. Like 2 hours later, I get a phone call back saying, you were right, because in Joel's press conference today, he said that the reason why Ben Smith didn't skate the warm-up was because Joel didn't want to tip his hand. It was like verbatim. It was like exactly what I said was what Joel said in his press conference. And it was, I don't know. It goes back to that. It's, you know, these hockey people think that they're, you know, like they're mad scientists. You know, if you knew that Marion wasn't going to play, or there was a chance that Marion wouldn't play, if you really want to break this thing down psychologically, wouldn't you want the Boston Bruins to see that Marion Hossa isn't playing so they could start thinking like, oh, this, you know, just even if it's subconsciously, oh, this is going to work. We might have it a little bit easier tonight, boys. You know, Hossa's out. And then they start to lose a little bit of focus because they're starting to think, okay, Hossa's out, you know, and they're excited because it's like, that's one of their big guns and he's out. And I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking about this thing too logically, but I would just, if you know, and again, you would want Marion to play if he could play, obviously, but I don't understand the whole not putting Smith in the warm up because, you know, and if you put him in there, and that was my suggestion, if you put him out there, a smart coach is going to know something's going on. But what does it really matter? You know what I'm saying? It's like, what does it really matter? Get Ben out there. Let him skate the warm-up. Let him, you know, he doesn't have to be in the line rushes. He can just be the extra guy out there. Let him go through the routine so he's in some kind of a rhythm. You're talking about a guy who hasn't played a hockey game in 6 weeks. And now you're going to drop him. You're going to drop a guy in to the Stanley Cup Finals onto a team that's already got its own issues. And I don't know. I mean, the Blackhawks, organizationally, they think that they've reinvented the wheel and they have all the answers and they're pretty goddamn arrogant about it. But this one to me is like shooting yourself in the foot. And Ben didn't, aside from the turnover on the first shift, which it was a bad turnover and we're speaking about is Ben Smith, I want to get into the lines in a second, but Ben Smith's out there and Patrick Sharp is kind of streaking up the middle. The Blackhawks are trying to clear their own zone and start a rush. Ben forces a puck up to the blue line, but through the middle, and of course it gets picked off and the Hawks get pinned in for an extra, 10, 15 seconds. Aside from that, I thought he played pretty damn well, considering he hadn't played in 6 weeks too. But Ben should have been the guy all along playing in these playoffs. Ben should have been put in the lineup for Victor Stahlberg in the Minnesota series. And if you were going to make that decision, like we talked about, if you're going to make that decision, if you're Joel and you're going to take Victor Stahlberg out, which, you're completely in the right to do if you're Joel Quenneville. Because Victor Stahlberg is horrible. I've never seen a Swedish-born hockey player who didn't know how to cycle. But if you're gonna do that, Ben Smith should have been the guy all along. And nothing against Brandon Bolick, because I thought Brandon Bolick was fine up until the turnover. But that's another issue that I have with Joel. It's like, you know, if you're gonna make that kind of a bold statement. And you're gonna put Bolick in for Stahlberg. You're gonna sacrifice the speed and by chance, if Victor Stahlberg were to be able to create some sort of glorious scoring chance with a speed where he was one on one with a goaltender, because that's the only way he's ever gonna have a chance to score. Because he just flings the puck at the net. He gets the puck, he's got his head down, he's nervous. That's why he's always offsides. That's why, whatever. I'm sick and tired of talking about Victor Stahlberg. I can't wait until I don't have to watch. I'm actually looking forward to next season, because when he ends up on the San Jose Sharks and everyone can't figure out why he's so terrible, then we'll be able to say, we told you so. And then, of course, next year, Blackhawks fans will be laughing at whoever signs Victor Stahlberg. All the ones that feel sorry for him and want him in the lineup, when they see him play for someone else next year, but whatever. Going back to the Bullock thing, if Joel, you're going to make that decision, if you're going to make that bold move, entering the Stanley Cup Finals to put Brandon Bullock back in the lineup after he hasn't played in weeks, and then he played – Brandon Bullock was, for what he is and what he's capable of, he was darn good in Game 1. And he made some nice plays in Game 2 up until – that not being able to get that puck out of that zone. But if you're going to do that, you're going to make that statement, you're going to put your ass out on the line the way Joel did. Don't turn around and take Bullock back out of the lineup the first time he makes a mistake. Because what Joel did there was basically admit – I don't think he made a mistake at all putting Bullock in the lineup. Because Bullock's not a bad player. People will tell you that he's a bad player, but he's not a bad player. He may be the worst player on the Blackhawks, but he's not. That doesn't quantify him as a horrible hockey player. The Blackhawks are a deep, talented hockey club that are in the Stanley Cup Finals. Being the 12th forward on a Stanley Cup Final roster is not a bad thing to be. And he's in his minutes, fourth line against fourth line, he holds his own. Made a bad play, and it cost the Hawks the game. But you know what? It was 6 minutes earlier when Patrick Sharp made a terrible play that could have very easily wound up in the Hawks net and ended that game, and nobody talks about that play because he's Patrick Sharp and because it didn't wind up in the Blackhawks net. But it happened. Andrew Ferentz pinched down the wall. Patrick Sharp had the puck. He decided to keep the puck and then try all on his own to skate that puck back down below the goal line behind Corey Crawford and then clear it out the other side. But what happened? Patrick Sharp got muscled off the puck by Tyler Seguin, and the Bruins almost ended the game right then and there. I mean, you go through that game and find guys that made mistakes and mistakes and mistakes that could have easily cost the Hawks the game. My point is that Joel should have stood up for himself as a coach in the decision he made and said, no, we're going to stick with Brandon. Because I think at this point he's losing his team. That's where I'm going with all this. I think at this point he's losing his team. I didn't have a problem with the lines that he brought out in Game 3. I really didn't. And I'll get to that in a second, but what did you have to say?
Well, if Joel's going to play this posturing, he doesn't want to tip his hand, you can let the guy know, hey, this is what we're doing. If Ben Smith really didn't know he was playing until after the warm-ups, you're setting him up, and I agree with you. I thought Ben Smith played, for what Ben Smith is, I thought he played great. I really did. I thought he was engaged. He was, fresh legs. I thought he played great. But, even if you don't want him out there for the warm-up to tip your hand, maybe it – 4 o'clock, you could say, look, this is what we're doing. If Marion can't go, you got to be ready. But if he really didn't know, I think Joel was setting him up for failure. Maybe not on purpose, obviously, but, like you said, they're reinventing the wheel and all this stuff. It's You're being too cute in every aspect.
Well, that right there. I mean, like, why did the Blackhawks not get quality chances to score last night? Because they were playing on a choppy ice surface, and they were trying to be too cute. Now, the Patrice Bergeron goal was a brilliant goal in two respects. Number one, okay, the power play goal that Bergeron scored, assisted by Jag. Okay, if you go back and watch that goal, it was a completely set play off the draw, which Boston can do at will because the Hawks can't win a fucking draw.
No,
and they won't get back in
all
the series until they do. But it's a set play off the draw, and the brilliance of that play, if you go back and watch that. Now, we talk about, you know, everyone talks about net front presence, okay? All right, but it's not always the right thing to do to send a forward and say, okay, stand on top of the goalie's crease. Get in his line of vision and stand on top of the crease, because that's sometimes will work against you. And if you go back and watch that play that the Bruins drew up, look at where Milan Lucic set up. Because it was obvious that it was a set play that the Blackhawks used to run a lot. You know, the backdoor play.
Patrick Sharp's go-through.
It was from a set position. The Blackhawks like to use that a lot in movement. But when it first began, it wasn't in movement. It was set up. But if you go back and watch that, Lucic starts, he's about 5 or 6 feet in front of the crease. So Seabrook, who's responsible for Lucic there, is not in the intended passing lane. Now, Lucic does drift back down, but the point of that was if Lucic starts on top of the crease, there's no passing lane there. Now, as the play developed, Lucic sort of gets pushed back towards the net by Seabrook, and not intentionally, it's just the way it happened. But, you know, and yes, Crawford should have got his stick in the lane, but it wouldn't have mattered, because if you go back and watch that replay, Jágr, it was a beautiful saucer over the crease and directly hitting Patrice Bergeron's tape before it even hit the ice. Bergeron is such a brilliant player, you know, had the poise and was calm enough to settle that puck, and then he fired in. It looked like it actually banked in off Crawford, off the bottom of his blocker, maybe the stick, but that was a beautiful play. But, you know, getting over to these lines, I mean, I didn't have a problem with them. I really didn't, because you had two guys coming into the lineup that hadn't been playing, one in 6 weeks and one in a couple of weeks, Stahlberg and Ben Smith. So you wanted to get everybody into the game and going. So he comes out with, and the one that everybody's been talking about, apparently, has been Jonathan Toews centering Frolik and Kruger. Now, I'll say this. When I first saw that, I go, okay, they're changing right away. You know, I go, all right, they're going to take the face off, and then Toews is going to get off. Because, you know, I don't know what you think, but I think Chara's been good, but I don't think Chara's been outstanding in the series so far. But it doesn't matter, because the Blackhawks are scared to death of him. They're so absorbed with that matchup that they're playing themselves right into Boston's hands. I mean, they've been desperately trying to get Toews away from Chara, but it doesn't matter. Especially, I don't know why Joel was so intent on that when he knew that he wasn't going to be able to control that on the road. But anyway, you got Toews between Frolik and Kruger, Hanzus between Saad and Kane. You've got that line back together from the regular season, which I thought was the right thing to do. with Shaw between Bickle and Stahlberg. If you're going to bring Stahlberg back and you're going to, you know, try to get him going, that was the right line to put him with. Put him with the line that had the success during the regular season. He should have confidence skating with those guys, right? You would think. And then you add Boland centering Sharp and Smith. Now, I thought that group of four lines was fine for the first period. But after that, your best player's got to play. And this is my problem with Joel and the way that he's managing his bench in the series is, you know, and I'll go back to game two. The Hawks didn't win game two because Joel got too absorbed with matching lines. You go back to game two. Every period, Dave Boland played more than Patrick Sharp. I'm just talking about the first three periods. Let's just take regulation. Every period, Dave Boland played more than Patrick Sharp. Every period. With the exception of the third period. Dave Boland played more than Patrick Kane in game two. Now, I know that we said before the series started that Dave Boland needed to come, you know, arrive in this series and be a factor. But the only thing that Dave Boland, outside of game one, when he played pretty well, I thought with Sharp. But, you know, for whatever reason, Joel turned those lines around. But ever since, all Dave Boland has been is a detriment. I mean, you know, it's a funny thing. I was talking to someone about this actually during the game last night. You know, Boland had that real dirty trip on Marchand in game two. I forget what period it was. But Boland kicked Marchand's skate out from underneath him as they were going into the end wall. It was a real, real jackass play. Which, you know, the funny thing about that is when people always, they romanticize about Dave Boland. And when they talk about when's Dave Boland going to show up? When is the Dave Boland that the Blackhawks need going to show up? What they're really talking about the Dave Boland who's dirty and who cheap shots guys, who, I mean, does the things like he's been doing in this series, games two and three, taking liberties with guys. That's the Dave Boland that the Blackhawks fans know and love. That's the Dave Boland that they can't wait to show up. The rat, dirty, disrespectful player. That's the Dave Boland that the Blackhawks fans want and they miss, right? So, you know, I just laugh because, you know, Blackhawks fans will complain and bitch and moan about the St. Louis Blues, but you've got Dave Boland on your team. One of the dirtiest players in the league. And you celebrate him for it. I mean, I get it, but it's so stupid.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And, you know, the stat that you just read, that Dave Boland played more than Patrick Kane, that really says something about how Joel is managing the bench. Or lack thereof. Because, you know, and I don't know if you'd given the actual time, that isn't just because the Hawks were killing penalties, and Patrick Kane doesn't kill penalties. You know, it's not like they were shorthanded the whole game, and, you know, that's why, you know, those guys got more ice time than, you know, your premier scorer.
No, I mean, in the second period, Dave Bowen had a penalty. So Dave Bowen was in the box for 2 minutes in the second period, and he still played 3 seconds more than Patrick Kane did in that period. It was 5:08 to 5:05. So they played the same amount, but Dave Bowen was in the box 2 minutes. Now, Patrick Kane's not going to be on the ice in a penalty kill unless the Hawks are down 2-0 in the third period, but still. I already know that it's been dictated to Joel that he's got to put Taves and Kane together in game four. But, so that's coming. I mean, it's been a long time coming. But if you're going to go down, you got to go down with your best. And the only issue that I have with the way Joel is coaching right now is how he's managing those minutes. You can start the way I know. Like I said, I had no issue with the way he started and the way he formulated those lines. But as the game goes along, however you're going to do it, you got to give your best players a chance to win the game for you. Whether it's just by having getting them out there and getting them as many minutes as you can, or putting them all together, and not just on power plays, because on power plays it's not working. The entire theory of the Blackhawks power play is flawed, because the Blackhawks are playing at three-quarter speed against, you have five players going at three-quarter speed, and that may be giving them more credit than they deserve, against four penalty killers that are going all out. They're losing the battle every single time. It doesn't take, it's going to take a brave coach to change the entire formula of how a power play is run in the NHL. It's going to take a brave coach, but it's about time that it happens. You have an extra body, and you don't utilize it. You have five guys standing around the perimeter of four guys formulating a box and closing up, lanes with sticks and legs and pushing everything to the outside. And an NHL goaltender is going to stop 98% of those shots. You got to take advantage of the numbers. You got to skate full speed every shift. If it means 40-second power, 35, 40-second power play shifts, you got to match the intensity of the penalty kill. The Blackhawks don't do that. And, the one guy that we do need to talk about is Brian Bickell. Because, I wrote about it in the Committed Indian. That was one that I posted up on the website. I've ranted and raved and picked on Brian Bickell for many years now. And it's a frustration of watching Brian Bickell in Norfolk, in Rockford, and in Chicago, in that it took 6 years for it to get in Brian Bickell's head that he could be a force physically, and that he had to do more than just fling 45-foot wrist shots. He's got a great wrist shot. It's powerful. It's deceptive. But he wasn't going to be an effective. Sorry about that. He wasn't going to be an effective NHL player night in and night out just doing that. Well, he finally got into it in these playoffs. But as we talked about before this series, he could not revert back to being perimeter Bickell, and he's done that in this series. And I'm sitting there watching the third period, the end of the game, and Shaw and Marchand are getting into it, and that's happening at the same time as Zdeno Chara is tossing Brian Bickell around just because he could. And I don't blame Chara. If I could toss people around just for the hell of it, I would do it too. I have done it. But I was laughing because I'm watching Chara do this, and I'm thinking to myself, what the hell are you doing, Chara? Bickle has been a wallflower in this series. Yeah, he's had a couple of nice hits. But he's been a wallflower in the series. What are you doing potentially waking this guy up when you know that Bickle can be a factor? In my opinion, Bickle and Shaw are the primary reason why the Blackhawks even got out of that Red Wings series. Those two were the two gamers that gave the Blackhawks a chance and bridged a gap until Jonathan Toews got his head out of his ass. We need to talk about him in a second, too. I'm sick and tired of people making excuses for Jonathan Toews. And I want to point this out because if people say, oh, wallflower Bickle, what do you mean by that? Okay. Third period. Think back to the third period in game three. It was about 12 and a half minutes left. Brian Bickle is skating up the left side. He's got Adam McQuaid, basically a half step behind him. What does Brian Bickle do? Instead of taking the puck as he was gaining the blue line, there was nothing McQuaid was going to be able to do about that. Bickle was going to gain the blue line. Make all the jokes about the Blackhawks power play that you want. If the Blackhawks are on the power play again and again and again and again, even if they don't score, they'll at least wear out to a degree the Boston penalty kill. And some of Boston's best players in this series, Danny Pae, obviously Bergeron, are on the penalty kill. It'll help you in some way. So instead of Brian Bickle taking that puck, gaining the blue line, and then using every ounce of energy he has left to drive to the net, either to create a better scoring chance for himself or force Adam McQuaid to take it down and get the Blackhawks another power play. What does Brian Bickle do? No, he doesn't do that. He flings a 50-foot wrist shot from the left wall, which Rask easily stops, and there's a whistle. Now, why do I bring this up? Because the very next shift, Johnny Oduya passes the puck up the middle to Marcus Kruger. Marcus Kruger takes two steps. Who's with him? Adam McQuaid. What does Adam McQuaid do? He's going to lose Kruger, so he puts a stick between Kruger's legs. I think Kruger embellished it a little bit, but Kruger draws a penalty. Bickle should have been the one to draw the penalty or create a better scoring chance for himself by driving, keeping that puck to the outside, shielding the puck and McQuaid's stick with his body, and either getting taken down or getting a prime scoring chance one-on-one with Rask. But he didn't do it because he's back to being perimeter, lazy, wallflower Bickle. Jonathan Toews, what is it now, one goal in 20 games?
Sounds right, yeah.
I said this the year of the Stanley, the year the Blackhawks beat the Flyers. One of my concerns about the Blackhawks, or one of the things that I was trying to formulate before, this was before that playoff started. Because that year I predicted the Hawks would go to the finals. I did not think that they'd win the cup. Obviously, I was wrong, but. The point that my viewpoint on Toews at the time was that I didn't believe that he was a number one, in the sense that, yes, Toews is a tremendous player that you want on your team. I'm not suggesting anything less than that. Obviously, he's a tremendous asset to your team. But in the number one spot, you have to contribute offensively. You have to be a factor in all zones, especially this time of year, every single night. And it hasn't happened these last 3 years. And my argument 4 seasons ago before they won the Cup was, in my mind, Jonathan Toews was not a 1, he was a 1A. And you know what? Perfect storm in 2010, a tremendous depth. You played the Flyers, matching up against the Flyers, skill versus skill, you're pretty even. The Blackhawks had a much better goalie, and they won in 6. Hawks were playing an NHL goalie. Maybe that series ends up differently. Who knows? But ever since, Jonathan Toews has been a disappointment in every single playoff. And instead of focusing on the fact that Jonathan Toews is a disappointment, people are trying to make excuses for him. And Joel, of course, putting him for 2 periods with Kruger and Frolik opens that discussion up. Where, you know, it's like I just saw, like, during the game and some of the stuff that I read after the game, it's like, well, you know, How do you put your Jonathan Toews with 2 guys that don't contribute offensively? That would seem like the perfect line mates for Jonathan Toews because he didn't contribute offensively either. What's wrong with it? Nothing's wrong with it. Why is it at this point, why is it Joe Quenneville's job? Why is it Joe Quenneville's responsibility to get Jonathan Toews? Why is it his responsibility to get his captain going? It's not. It's Jonathan Toews' responsibility to get his ass in this series. No one else. You want to be, and it's this, you know, Jonathan Toews isn't running around calling himself this, but he's the captain. He's paid like he's the best player, one of the best players on the Blackhawks. He's very well decorated, and he's counted on to be the leader on the team. And you could be the leader in the locker room. You can have the respect. You could play the way he does, and that's great. But my point is that he's proving to be a 1A, not a 1. He's Joe Nieuwendyk. He's not Mark Messier. And there's nothing wrong with being Joe Nieuwendyk. There's nothing wrong with being Joe Nieuwendyk. But I think that we need to take a step back and stop thinking that Jonathan Toews is more than he is. Because he's proven. You know, I love, you know, and I think, you know, I was someone that used you know, the buzz phrase sample size many years ago. So I think I'm partly responsible or to blame for this. But sample size is something that people that are too afraid or not courageous enough to have an actual opinion, people use that. When you see people write sample size, oh, you know, I don't think it's enough of a sample size. What they're really trying to say is they don't know. They don't want to have an opinion because they don't want to be wrong. So they say, oh, it's too little of a sample size to judge. No, they just don't have anything to say. But guess what? We have a large sample size on Jonathan Toews, and what does it say? It says that he can't be counted on to score in the playoffs. So again, what do the Blackhawks have to hang their hat on right now? What do they get to? What can they grasp on? What can they believe in? They can't believe in their captain. They can't believe in Brian Bickell. They're losing faith in their coach. Their general manager did not go out and get them a credible center to play with Patrick Kane. Marian Hossa is hurt. The coach is playing Patrick Sharp and Patrick Kane less than he's playing Dave Boland. the power play is a joke. They're allowing the Boston Bruins to do exactly what they want. I don't see intelligent individual effort. I think the effort is there. It's just how the effort is being applied. I don't see it. I think that, of course, the Blackhawks are talented enough that they come out and they're desperate and they play, you know, and up and down that bench. It should be this way on Wednesday night. They should play like this is a game seven, because if they lose it, yeah, they're done. Because this isn't – the Boston Bruins are not the Detroit Red Wings, and the only way they get back and they win three in a row is if Boston starts losing guys to injuries, which could happen, but you can't count on it. So this is an absolute must-win Wednesday night in Boston. It's an absolute must-win, and they all know that. So that you're going to get – whatever the Blackhawks have to give, you're going to get it. And that should be enough to pull out a win. How many more performances like that are you going to get from these guys? And if it doesn't go well for them early, will the coach unravel? Will the team unravel? Are we still headed for the game where Corey Crawford plays incredible, it's 1-1, and then he gives up that bad one with 5 minutes left to go? I mean, the series, you think it's over already. I think the series is still headed for six or seven games. It's just, to me, it's playing out exactly like I thought it would, and that Boston's just too much. This is not the Boston Bruins that got pushed to the brink of elimination in Game 7 by the Maple Leafs. It's not the same team. This is a team that is talented up and down, poised, and, you know, the Blackhawks are making it easy on them. So we'll see how it goes. But I wanted to ask you. I wanted to do it much earlier. But in the third period, the Krejci hook on Saad in front of the benches, did you think that should have been a penalty shot?
Ooh. I don't know. It was damn close. I don't think so.
Well, I think the reason why it wasn't is because Seidenberg got back. So it wasn't – I thought it was borderline. I mean, you look at that play and – I mean, Krejci did the right thing. Whether it was going to get called a penalty shot or not, he did the right thing. But Seidenberg got back.
I think where it happened on the ice had a lot to do with it not being called as well.
That it was still in the neutral zone?
Yeah. It, like you said, it was borderline. It could have gone either way, but you know, with Krejci getting back, it kind of – I think it was the right call.
I'm just going through making sure that we talked about everything that we were going to talk about. I don't know. I should, in an update to last week, I think we're done, but in an update to last week, Superstar, and your suggestion about how I exit the bathroom.
Yeah, how'd it go?
But, you know, we really make things difficult on the people that jump in and out of this program, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
I'm not going to do the backstory. Go back and listen to, I don't know when we talked about it. I think it was towards the end. But in an update, I have tried your advice but I do have to say that I've been exercising the butt maneuver as many times as I can. But the problem with exiting that bathroom, using my butt on the handle, is that the handle, it turns away from the door opening. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the open end of the handle is toward it runs long along the door instead of the end of the door. So it really makes for an awkward, sometimes painful exit from the bathroom. So I've been trying your way, which is to wash my hands and then keep the towels the wet towels in my hand and then carry them back to my office. But I really feel weird about that. Because it's like people are looking at me like, what the heck is this guy doing? You know? So I if the coast is clear, I'll go with your method, wet towels. But now, of course, if people are in the bathroom, they see me mounting myself on the handle. That probably doesn't look too good either. But I haven't really given that much thought. But maybe I should. They're going to start blaming me for having the handprints above the urinal.
Yeah. Right now there's a podcast down the dial talking about some asshole who uses his ass to get out of the bathroom.
Probably. Oh, there's something else I wanted to talk to you about, but I can't remember. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I can't think about it. It doesn't matter.
There you go. You'll remember in 10 minutes and text me.
Probably not. I'm all aggravated about my car.
It didn't sound good there.
Well, I was driving back into the city on Saturday, and my fuel gauge, my fuel pressure gauge, was acting all wacky. You know, it was like it was bouncing up and down, like from normal to dangerously low. You know, like it was in the red below the L. And I was like, "What the heck is going on here?" But I was being picked up for the Hawks game, and I didn't really have any time to screw around with it. So I went to the Hawks game and, you know, of course, you know, everything else that happens on a Saturday night. And so Sunday morning I woke up, I go out to the car, I drive it over to the Jewel, and I pop the hood, I check my oil. Just, you know, it's like, okay, the oil pressure gauge is acting all nutty. Let's just check the oil, you know. It's like the process of elimination, let's just do the things that I'm capable of doing, which isn't much because I had autos class. I just never went to it, which I sort of regret now. But, I mean, that was back in the day when Arch Deluxes, I mean, those were in fashion. And Arch Deluxe, Auto Shop, Arch Deluxe always won.
Yeah.
Because it was at lunchtime. The school allowed me to take Auto Shop at a lunch hour. And they gave me a free walk around the school pass to, like, leave the school and go get my car. He gone. Every day my auto teacher, he'd be like, "Where's Block?" And everyone would be like, "He gone." But anyway, so I checked my oil, and I've got no oil. I mean, I got Superstar, I had no fucking oil. Like, I had to go inside the, how do you say, in the Osco and buy 4 quarts of oil and put it in, you know, that's some serious business. You need oil, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, maybe this will fix it, you know, because I'm just like dreading taking my car in, because, like, how the hell am I going to be without my car for any length of time? I just hate it. I don't like people. I don't like public transportation. I need my car. So I drive away, and the fuel pressure gauge is still doing the same thing. So I'm like, oh, okay. So now I've already surmised that I have a fuel leak, and my fuel pressure gauge is going all nuts. the car isn't running any differently. So I'm figuring, it's probably a sensor. So I'm gonna bring it in. And so anyway, long story short, I bring it in. They call me right back, and they're like, all right, it'll be $460. Okay. All right, no big deal. You got everything fixed? Yeah, everything will be fixed. Your car will be ready by noon. I'm like, all right, well, I'll pick it up at like 6 o'clock. Oh, yeah. I should have just gone and picked it up right then and there, because they call me back and they're like, your ball joints really need to be changed. It could be a hazard. Okay, go ahead and change the ball joints. So then he's like, there's something else. And then I had to take a look at the air conditioning. So he's like, oh, yeah, we fixed the air conditioning, and then there was something else. And then so he called me back. He goes, all right, your car's ready. It's like 4 o'clock. I'm already on the Kennedy. And he's like, oh, yeah, because I borrowed a car. And he's like, yeah, your car's ready. I'm like, okay, great. I'm like, how much is it? He goes, $997. It was 4 hours ago, it was $460. I'm like, all right, as long as everything's fixed. He's like, yeah, you know, and I'm like, how long are you going to be there? He's like, I'll be here at 6. It'll be perfect. I'll be there by 5, quarter after 5. Guy calls me back 10 minutes later. He goes, when did the fuel pressure gauge start going nuts on you? Was it before or after you put in 4 quarts of oil? I'm like, what kind of question is that? And I said, it was before. He goes, oh, because we took your car for a drive and it's still doing it. I'm like, okay, well, you're the mechanic. Put it back, bring it back in there and figure it out. And he goes, oh, well, we could do it, but we can't do it till tomorrow. So, I mean, we ran the diagnostics and the engine's running fine. And I talked to whoever he talked to, because I tried to bring it to my mechanic, but my mechanic was on vacation. So I got this guy. He seemed like a good guy. I'm sure he knows what he's doing for the most part. But he didn't fix one of the main reasons why I brought it in. He didn't fix it. So I'm still driving around in a car that says I got no fuel pressure.
I love the fact that you spent $1,000 and didn't get what you brought it in there fixed.
I know. I spent $1,000, and the reason I brought my car in, it didn't get that wasn't remedied. Everything else got fixed, but the reason I brought my car in, that did get fixed.
Yeah, that's great.
But I'm freaking out because when I was a kid, superstar, when I was a little block, just like running around all crazy, my father had, wish I can remember the name of the car. Let's just call it a Datsun. It wasn't a Datsun, but let's call it a Datsun. I think actually it was a Datsun. He had a fuel leak or an oil leak. Excuse me. He had an oil leak, and he brought the mechanic, and the mechanic said he fixed it. And then, like, a few days later, my dad, like, drove home from work, and he stopped at, like, the grocery store, and he went inside, and when he came out, his car was on fire. Like, the whole thing was up in flames. Total loss. Like, the car gone. He gone. So that's what I'm thinking. I was thinking, I drove in this morning, and I did this. I'll admit to this. I went through my car, and I picked out everything that I couldn't be without. And I put it in my work bag, and I'm totally freaked out by it. I'll admit. But I just assumed that I'd go back out to the parking garage. Because every day I park at Lake and Wells, and I just imagine hearing, like, being in the office and just hearing, like fire, you know, fire truck horns, and just being like, oh, shit, that's my car.
I love the fact that I could just see you walking down Lake Street with a case of Molson because you can't live without it. You got to get it out of your car.
No, I took that out before I left for work this morning. But, yeah, I'm totally freaked out by it. But that's how it goes. Nothing ever works out for me. Nothing ever works out for me. And I'm okay with it. I'm at peace with it now. But
yeah.
So any day now, my car is just going to – I'm just going to be driving down to Kennedy. It's just going to go up in smoke, and I'm just going to say, fuck it. I'm just going to drive it until I have to jump out.
You're lucky that the guy stayed till 6, and, you know, because 4 hours it added $500, $600. Man, can you imagine if he had that car for a few hours in the morning?
No. Well, I already know.
That'll be $3,000, but we didn't fix what you came here for.
Well, I'm bringing it back next week for a tune-up, which is going to be another $1,000, and to hopefully properly fix the fuel gauge thing. But all right, or not the oil pressure. You got anything else, Superstar?
No. I need a better performance. Maybe somebody can unscrew our stars and they can get on track and, you know, hopefully try to steal one. But, you know, it's not looking good, buddy. It was really funny. As we were running down all the, you know, all the issues that we had, you know, Jonathan Toews has been awful. Bickle, perimeter player, Dave Bolin, and Joel Quinville, and all this stuff. That five minutes of the show got really depressing.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to depress anyone.
It was like,
I figured everyone would already know this. I wasn't trying to depress anyone.
Yeah, no, we do, but that was really disheartening. I guess, you know, on a closing note, the only thing you could really take solace in is the fact, as bad as you played, you only lost that game 2-0. I mean, you
didn't score. The game went on another 3 hours. You still wouldn't have scored.
No. But it's kind of one of those things that game could have been 6-0. You know, so the fact that it was close. I come on, I'm grasping for straws here. I'm looking for anything to kind of, you know, put a positive spin on it. But yeah, there's not a lot there.
Well, the positive spin is that Kane and Toews and a reawakened Bickle and perhaps Marian Hossa, we should say, I don't think we did say, or I did say, that Marian Hossa is quote-unquote likely to play in Game 4. So you got that. I mean, you know, if I was in Vegas and I was going to put money on the game, and if I was in Vegas, I probably would put money on the game. I'd put it on the Hawks to win Game 4. I really would. But I just don't see him winning the series. Because I think, the good thing about it is that if they do win Game 4, then they have 2 days off until Saturday, you know, which could, if the Hawks win, that definitely does work in their favor. Now, if they were to lose, you give Joel an extra day to, like, you know. You know, the thing with Joel and everyone, the thing with Joel is that when things, we've seen this for years now, it's nothing new. When things go wrong, he feels like he has to change something. Because if things are going badly and he does nothing, then the questions are, well, how come you didn't do anything? Well, and this isn't just Joel, this is a lot of coaches. If things are going bad and you modify, whether it's you change up the lines or you take someone's minutes away, then, you know, the theory of the active coach. If your coach was making moves and trying different things, then he can throw his hands up in the air and say, well, we tried some new things and they didn't work, sort of taking himself off the hook to an extent. I mean, I don't think that necessarily absolves the coach of blame when a team, you know, is, you know, prepared badly or underperforms, but, you know, that's just what a coach in these times is going to do, you know, and that's what he does. Now, you can analyze what he does, break it down, say, which is what we've done, but you know that's what he's going to do because that's the theory. But anyway, I want to thank Molson Canadian again. Again, facebook.com/MolsonCanadianUSA. Go to it, like it. We would like to thank 8,000 Puck Chatter Radio listeners for going and liking that, since it might not be 8,000. It's probably more like 4. But we definitely made an impact over there, and very grateful for that. Again, Molson Canadian, the official imported beer of the NHL, Molson Canadian, facebook.com/MolsonCanadianUSA. And I guess that's it, Superstar. Say goodbye to the people.
Goodbye, people.
We'll be back, I guess, at some point. I guess it all depends on what happens in these next couple of games. If Wednesday doesn't go, like, well at all, maybe we'll come back on Thursday and do something. Or I'll come back with somebody. I know that you'll want to watch Burn Notice. Burn Notice has been very good so far, I think.
I loved it.
Yeah. I thought it was really good, the first two. Looking forward to Thursday night. But, so we'll be back at some point. We'll figure it out. And hopefully we'll have a special guest as well. Had one lined up, and then they canceled today. Good thing I don't advertise these things, because, well, we'd really look bad.
Yeah. Even
worse than we are. All right, everybody. TheThirdManIn.com, PuckChatter.com, and also BlogTalkRadio.com/TheThirdManIn. iTunes. Search for us on iTunes. You can find it there. And enjoy Game 4 and Game 5. If you're out there, come over and say hi to Block. I'll probably be all aggravated and drunk.
Or so
happy
normal.
And drunk. Yeah, and drunk. All right, that's it, everybody. Good night, everybody.
I've just seen her face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. La da 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 da. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I have never known the like of this. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. But other girls were never quite like this. Da 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 da. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Calling me back again. I've just seen her face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Na na na. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Oh, falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again.
Johnny always says you can just screw so much and drink so much.
What are you doing up here? You been benched yet?
Yes, I'm real first in my professional career. I've been benched.
Why is that?
Won't fight.
Well, you could play.
Look at you. Why don't you do something with your life? You can sit around here all day. You contribute nothing to society.
What's the worst thing that can happen?
Well, you'd be embarrassed and humiliated in front of a large group of people and have to walk out in shame with your tail between your legs.
Yeah, so?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I forgot who I was dealing with.
Golf's no different from hockey. Requires talent, self-discipline.
Golf requires goofy pants and a fat ass. You should talk to my neighbor, the accountant, probably a great golfer, huge ass.